Well, welcome to the True Man Podcast with Mike Van Pelt, the comeback coach, helping you gain peace, clarity, and understanding in your walk with God as a man, a father, and a spouse. Hey, get involved with the show. Send your email to mike@truemanlifecoaching.com. If you're wondering what's gone adrift in my masculine soul and asking, is there more to life? This is where it begins. This is the True Man Podcast. Well, welcome to the True Man Podcast with Mike Van Pelt. This is an invitation to radical reconstruction of a man's masculine heart and soul in a place of safe community where we dare to ask questions deep-seated inside a man and explore ways to help you become a better man, a better son, a better dad, and a better spouse. Well, thank you for so much for joining me on the True Man Podcast during this month of November, with Thanksgiving right around the corner. I can tell you that I am grateful that you show up on a weekly basis to support the True Man community. Now, one of the reasons that I do this podcast is to provide you with resources to become the man that you want to be. Now, over the last few years, I've been very fortunate and blessed to meet people, coaches, consultants, and organizations with the same or similar type of purpose. Today, I get to introduce you to a friend, a men's life coach, Drew Duraney. Like you, the listener, Drew has his own story on how his life transpired and what happened and how being a men's life coach really became his purpose. And on the True Man Podcast, Drew is going to share his story with you and how he arrived at where he's at today. And with that, let's get on to the conversation. Let's not waste a second. Let's get to Drew Duraney right now, and I'll be back with you in a few minutes. Enjoy our conversation. Well, hello, friend. Welcome back to the True Man Podcast. You know, when people ask me, I often tell them, working with men, while satisfying and noble, it's something I really feel called to do. It can be difficult and full of challenges because most men don't show up until they're beat down like a car at a crash up derby. And I think today's guest might know a thing or two about that. So welcome to the podcast, my good friend, Drew Duraney. Now, Drew works with men and teaches them the steps needed to strengthen self-identity and self-worth and become more confident in their lives. He hosts a wonderful podcast called From Craving In to Crushing It, which I've been on. And you have to check out his international best-selling book. And boy, do I love the name of this book. I'll Have What She's Having, a memoir of a reformed people pleaser. Drew, so awesome to finally have you on the show.
Thanks so much, Mike. It's a pleasure to be here. Just to be in the same kind of room with the True Man is an honor, I'm telling you.
No, don't do that. Actually, if we had hit record, we'd be about halfway through people by now. But, you know, Drew and I have known each other for quite a while and done some collaborative stuff together. But, you know, Drew, when I met you, you weren't doing the men's life coaching thing. You were doing something else, but you've transitioned to this. So tell everybody a little bit about your story and why you've gotten to this point today where working with men is something that you feel compelled to do.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, Mike. Yeah, I was in healthcare for 24 years, you know, growing up. We're basically handed a belief system from our parents, and they got their belief system from their parents and so forth. Yeah. And by the time it got to me, you know, I'm here living someone else's life and not realizing it. And see, I wanted to be a doctor. I did all the steps, you know, life is linear, right, Mike? Isn't that what we're told? We're told step A, B, C, and D, and then you do all that and E will happen.
With so, you know, I wanted to be a doctor. The dog and
I was looking for that white picket fence. So I wanted to be a doctor. Anyway, I went to college with an undeclared major. I ended up going into psychology because I was hanging around with the people who were pre-med and hanging around with people who like to go out to bars on Thursday night. And I was like, okay, who am I hanging out with? And, you know, at 18 years old, I'm like, okay, I chose the Thursday night bar. So I kind of gave up the hard sciences and I went with psychology, which I still consider a hard science. And I was really intrigued with human behavior. And
it sounds to me like you were dealing with the soft sciences or the liquid sciences.
Yeah, right. They would say soft sciences. That is what, and what we know now is how powerful and impactful mental health is.
Yeah,
so you talk about the hard sciences. I mean, it goes into everything. And so, you know, when I graduated college, I still didn't know what I wanted to do with my life. Yeah. So I stayed on for 2 years, got my master's degree, and I worked full time at the university. And then the pivotal moment was lunch with one of my teachers who asked what I wanted to do with my life. And I said, I'm still not sure. He asked what I liked. I said, I love human behavior and I love healthcare and I love numbers and I love taking, you know, helping people. He said, how about hospital administration? I didn't know what that was. I just thought doctors and nurses hang out together and take care of
people.
Seems
kind of like a random statement to some degree, right?
Well, yeah, you know what? He was figuring, okay, human behavior, health, you know, and taking care of people and numbers. Yeah, he put it all together. So I'm like, okay, yeah.
Healthcare.
Healthcare. Hospital administration. So I did get into that. Did 24 years of that. And pivotal moment was, for me, July of 2015. I'd been married for 15 years. We had 3 kids. And I, you know, followed that A through whatever. Had a couple master's degrees. I got my MBA in healthcare administration. I'm riding high, 6-figure healthcare salary. And I have my best friend reaches out to me and asks me to come over to his house. He had something to tell me. So I get over to his house and he goes, I don't know how else to tell you this, so I'm just going to say it. Your wife is leaving you. I'm like, what? Yeah, he had gotten a call asking for him to look out for me and take care of me because she was going to leave me. I guess she didn't think my best friend would call me and let me know.
How did she think you were going to find out?
I don't know. You know, that's another podcast. That's another book. That's another everything. So with that, we went through mediation for 3 years. And we didn't want to drag the kids through the Jersey healthcare, the Jersey court system, because it's not too friendly to kids or the man. So we did mediation. 3 years, Mike. You imagine 3 years of going through. Well, my mindset was, she's going to change her mind. I'm going to convince her we're going to stay married. She had her mind set. She was already had a boyfriend, you know? So, but I was delusional because I had that mentality that I could fix things, which many men have that thought. And most of my decisions during those 3 years were based, I did it out of emotion, and I recommend to anybody going through what I was going through, don't make big decisions out of emotion. It's probably not a healthy idea. So April of 2018 was when the divorce was final. So I come out of the court with this nice piece of paper called the divorce decree that kind of gave me legal closure to the marriage. The other closure would take a long time. And what I find you probably know this more than others, most men tie their self-identity or self-worth to their significant other and their job.
Very much so. Yep.
Yeah. And at the time, you know, I didn't realize that when you tie your self-worth and self-identity, what you think about yourself, to external circumstances that move and fluctuate, recipe for disaster.
Yep.
So divorce is final. And to my credit, I didn't fall into that victim mentality yet. I said, I'm turning 50 on October 6th. This is 2018. I'm going to throw myself a birthday party. So I invite everybody from every part of my life, except the ex-wife. I did not invite her. I brought my kids, my parents, my family, college friends, high school guys I coached baseball with, the town. It was one of the best days of my life. It gave me the validation that, you know, I don't have to base my self-identity just on one thing. And, you know, and I was working at the last hospital I worked at the time. And it just so happened that at that point, I had one of the managers in my department who reported to me, she accidentally lost some patient information at the hospital. So I had to submit a HIPAA violation, which is where you send in the report to the compliance officer because it's the right thing to do. 10 days after my birthday, which was also 10 days after I submitted that report, I was brought into human resources and with the head of HR and my boss, and I was fired. Leadership change. And as an at-will employee, that's what you're told. You don't learn really why.
Yeah,
I was shown the exit to the door, email was locked. And then 7 weeks later on LinkedIn, I get this alert that says, congratulate so-and-so on her promotion. So the woman who perpetrated the HIPAA violation was then promoted to my director's position and I was fired. So that's when my victim and blame mindset kicked in, Mike. So now I'm blaming the wife for the divorce and I'm blaming my boss for getting fired. Well, I really wasn't able to hold on to that for long because 10 days after that, my son had suicidal ideations because he was the one most impacted by the divorce. He was 14 at the time of the divorce, 11 at the time of the separation.
Yeah.
So we, the two of us, my ex-wife and I, we had to join forces and get him some help. So that was the third hit. And that's where I blamed myself. I'm thinking, oh, I'm so focused on me and the divorce. I didn't even think about my son. And then we bring him up. It took 40 days to get a bed at an inpatient facility for him to get some help. 40 days. So I spent 40 yeah. days with him. I didn't sleep, made sure he was safe. And I told him my job as a father is just to keep you safe. So come December 8th of 2018, we go up about an hour and a half away to Connecticut and we're going to drop him off. My parents came up with us. He points to my parents, his grandparents, and says, I hope nothing happens to them when I'm here. I said, nothing's going to happen to you, honey. You take care of your health. It's the most important. Fast forward to Christmas Eve, 2018, my dad goes to the bathroom. He sits on the toilet. He strains, he perforates his bowel, goes into septic shock. 3 weeks later, my dad dies in intensive care. Healthy 80-year-old who had just a month before his birthday told me how proud he was of me, of everything I'm going through, and I'm still fighting. And he kind of endorsed me starting my own company because he had always been an IBMer for 35 years. So I listened to that. So a month after, he's fine and he gives me his the green light. And I felt great because I got dad's like blessing. I start the company and this happens. And he's gone. And at that point, I blamed God. So now I had a lot of people in that blame room. And as a man, you shun your support systems when things go bad. Because that's what we're told to suck it up and man up. So I look forward and I'm thinking, I don't want to live anymore, Mike. And I knew that if I looked within myself, my brain, my gut, and my heart would have told me, end it. You know, because when you're in a bad state and you keep asking yourself the same question, yourself is going to agree with you. So I had to look outside myself. I looked at the eyes of my three kids and the eyes of my mother. And I said, okay, for me to get through this, I've got to bridge that gap between caving in and coping.
Yep.
And I had to get clarity of purpose by looking in the eyes of them. And I helped them get through it. And I did it without emotion. I didn't ask for help. I, you know, all the stuff that men are supposed to do. And when I got through it, they were okay. I realized I never grieved. I went through autopilot. I just went through it and I was broken, man. And I realized that something's got to give. And at that point, I gave up on my dream to start the company because dad died. I let my all the self-limiting beliefs hit and I bought a franchise. And that's ends up when you and I ended up meeting. I bought a franchise. And the business model was great. It just was not in healthcare, but I shunned healthcare because my ego was bruised. And I first company I ever owned, and I put so much money into it, and it was losing money, and then my passion wasn't there. And in the process, I started writing a book. And I know you're familiar with writing books because you've got one. it's a fun process, right? We were just talking about that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, in writing it, I hit an emotional breakdown and I realized that my purpose in life wasn't to own a franchise. My purpose in life was to get men to start telling their story because I started telling my story to other guys who it could resonate with. And I started to heal from within, Mike. And from healing from within, it was cathartic. And then these men who I really didn't know that well started me telling me their story and they're feeling better. And I'm like, I'm on to something. So I woke up last August of 2022 and I walked away from the franchise. I breached a 10-year agreement. I just walked away and I started a men's support group of which you were one of my eight tribesmen. I wanted to bring on eight good human being men who get it and could help me try to build this thing. And as I was building it, I realized it wasn't growing the way I wanted it to because I was building it because it's what Drew needed. The way, the shape, and the form, I did the golden rule, which is all nice, but if I want it to grow, I've got to address the pain point of other men. So that's why I put a pause on it, and I interviewed 23 men about their mindset. Not what they think men's mindset is, but their mindset. A bunch of open-ended questions. And what I came back with was so astounding and resonating. Collectively, all of them, when I got to the question, what's the number one roadblock holding you back from reaching your goals? They said me, or I'm in my own way. And the ones who said time, when we dive deeper, it was because they were doing things during all the time they had that weren't aligned with their goals. Procrastination, comparison, all the self-sabotage stuff.
Yeah.
So I'm now focusing everything I do on helping men get out of their own way. How do we find those blind spots to overcome self-sabotage?
Yeah, what do you think it is after doing those interviews, Drew?
Yeah.
And I'm right there with you. I don't think if somebody's being honest, they're going to say, you know what, end result was I was the one blocking everything. It wasn't so-and-so, or it wasn't, if they're being honest, okay?
If they're being honest, right.
Why do we do that?
You know, I have a lot of theories. I know, I now know why I think I did it. When you care so much about what other people think about you, and I know I got that, you know, growing up, you know, my mom does care what people think about her. My dad, not so much, but my dad never, we never really talked about how do you combat that. If you don't care, how do you carry yourself? But my dad never had a filter, so he didn't care. And so when he and my mother would go out, they'd always come back in a fight because he would say what he's thinking. And my mom would be like, we're never going to be able to go out with them again.
There is some freedom in that, I think. You know, I really and truly do. I mean, I know people like that. And even on occasion now, because I feel like I've gotten to really know my true self. And, you know, on occasion, I'll just be like, there it is. You know, because to me, that's the freedom that I've found. And when I say that, I'm not saying I walk up to people and tell them that they look squirrely or something like that. Right. I don't mean that, but I mean, you know, there's freedom about being in a place where, you know, you can be in truth.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, you know, I agree with you. And though if I take myself back, you think about being in middle school, you're not equipped with the tools and the resources to realize that, right? I think we come into this world, we are built to fail, and failure is good depending on how you handle it, but you don't think failure is good at the time it's happening. And, you know, if you want to be the popular person and you see the people who are getting the attention or the jocks or the this or the that, if you're not one of those and you want to be part of that, invited into that group, with the brain that you have at that time, you think there's only one way, and that's change who you are, right?
And it's very true.
And that's what a lot of us do.
And then you get these dangerous sayings like, you know, fake it till you make it is one of the popular sayings, and you know, and I think one of the challenges that a lot of men have, a lot of people, but we'll say men since we both work with men, is you start to wear a mask and you know, you try to pose and you try to be something that you're not. Right. And ultimately, that is a very isolating place to be in. That's a very lonely place to be in, because you know when you're not being honest, you know when you're not being real.
Yep.
And, you know, my feelings are that people want you to be real. They don't want you to make up they don't want you to be the guy on social media standing in front of every $200,000 car or, you know, $500,000 plane that you come across and take a picture and act like it's yours. You know, I mean, that's not who people want to surround themselves with.
No, it's not. And I think that, you know, we're basically taught really age 7, greater than 50% of our belief systems formed for us. And by the time we're 18, about 90% is. And what I find interesting is it's not really until we're in our 30s that we may start to, at least a high percentage of us may start to think about, hey, my belief system's not mine. I've been living a different life. Because in our 30s, at least I did, I started thinking, what's my purpose in life? Like, what am I going to, what am I doing the next bunch of years? And then when I hit 50, it's like, what's my legacy going to be?
Yeah.
Now, and I don't mean to be a downer throwing this data out, but if we look at, you think about, but talk about mid, well, with the talk about midlife crisis, right?
Yeah.
And men are saying, oh, I'm 50. It's my midlife crisis. That's bull, because get this number. Do you know that the average lifespan for women in the U.S. is 79.1? And the average lifespan for men in the U.S. is 73.2. It's the largest gap since 1996. So do the math. If your average lifespan is 73.2, then when would your midlife be? 36 and a half years old. So technically your midlife crisis would have to happen at 36 and a half years old. At 36 and a half years old, you're not thinking of dying. So, and I don't want you to. My point is, if you and I are doing our work, Mike, yes, we want to help the 35 to 50 year olds, but damn, I want to help the 15, 16 year old and say, don't go your life until 35 or 50 to realize that you're not living the life that you're on this earth to live.
Yeah. And you know, I got to say, and I agree with you. I agree with you. Unfortunately, there's plenty of 40, 50 year olds that are still licking their wounds from when they were 17, 18 years old or younger, unfortunately, and trying to deal with that. You know, unfortunately, and I find myself apologizing to my kids a lot. You know, I got an 18 and a 20 year old because we're growing up in this just crazy ass world. I mean, it's, I would not want to be, you know, as you were saying that, I was thinking, man, I wouldn't want to be 30 again. But I, worse than that, I wouldn't want to be a teenager in this environment.
No.
I think the stuff that is coming at them, you know, when you and I talk about trying to run a business, and if we were to just sit and have a conversation about technology, I'm sure both our heads would spin off because it's you know, it's just overwhelming. And so, you know, we as people are not built for this technology that we've surrounded ourselves with. And so, you know, if you look at some of the statistics that are even coming out, you know, with these kids nowadays, and their mental health, you know, people like to say there's bullying, you know, bullying going on. Well, there's always been that going on. So what's the real problem here? It's the fact that they've grown up guilty as charged, you know, with parents that bought their, you know, kids mobile phones, and they're on those things all the time. You know, my kids grew up, that's all they know. They don't know anything else, but that's not real life. It's not real life.
No, it's not. You know, I think too is, and I'm going to say it because I always say what I'm thinking, the whole pandemic thing that hurt, has hurt and will hurt generations and generations of children.
Yes.
Humans were not made by our creator to be isolated. And I believe a lot of this was by design. We're seeing the ramifications. My kids are 21, 19, and 17. The pandemic or our reaction to the pandemic with the lockdown ruined my boys. They are probably 4 years behind in social skills and who they are.
Yeah,
because when you tell people you can't leave your home, and you're stuck with all those darn electronics, so much came out with that those phones. You had those predators on the other line, and you couldn't see people face to face. Hugs are so important in life. Release three very important hormones. You couldn't do that. I mean, living by fear.
Yeah,
fear was instilled in us for something we didn't even know about. I'm telling you, Mike, I was in the healthcare field for 30 years, and the ramifications are hard because these poor therapists and psychiatrists, psychologists are overwhelmed with the number of children who need help. And many aren't even asking for help because they don't even know what to ask because they're so young. Parents don't know what to do. We need to fix that. And I think we have to help any age that comes to us broken or suffering in silence. Your duty and my duty is to help you.
I would say that's fair. How do you think, because a lot of people would be like, well, what do these guys know about helping 17, 18 year old dudes? How do you think we could serve a younger a younger market? Because I'm sure you do. People will always go, here's a business thing. So I apologize. I'm going to make a business statement. People will go, well, what's your target market? What's your avatar? Da, 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 da. And I typically say, well, it's typically men in their 40s or 50s. Mm-hmm. And I don't discount the younger people. I just say I'm searching for. Now, I will say this, Drew, and I don't know if you've had this happen to you. I've had a couple of moms call me because it was a divorce situation and they knew that they needed their son to have some male guidance.
Right.
And in both of those cases, I've said, does your son want a coach? Well, what do you mean? And I said, I can't say yes to you. I need your son to ask me if he wants to be coached.
Yep.
And I hate that. It tears my heart out because I can only imagine what's really going on there. But the reality is, as you know, is that if somebody doesn't come to me and ask to be coached, we really can't have much of a discussion.
No,
that's true. Because that person, they may not be willing. They may not be forthcoming. And there's just going to be pulling going on. And you can't pull and coach at the same time. And so I've had to decline those. But like you, Drew, I do think that it's important that because the divorce rate's so high, there's a lot of kids running around that don't have a male role model present all the time in their life. We won't even go into the fatherlessness statistics in this country, which are off the charts.
Yep.
And so I agree with you. So what can we do to reach out to these young people?
Well, it's funny. The mother who came to you, I probably would have asked her if she has a coach because she might need one. Sorry about that. I did not say sorry. No, not sorry. Sorry, not sorry. Just like a good coach should have a coach.
Yeah.
I honestly believe, and I didn't do this, I would have loved to have a parent coach, one who's gone through it. We didn't know about that kind of stuff at the time, but I feel for parents because it's their first time going around. And when they ask for advice, quite often they're going to ask their parents for advice, who are going to give them the same advice they would have given from their own parents. And it just perpetuates that pattern. What I would do, I would have done exactly what you did, and quite possibly just asked to be able to reach out to that kid, maybe just have a conversation with that kid just to see if he wants to. Because if a mother asks the kid, do you want to coach? Kid's going to say no. He doesn't know what that is. What does that entail?
Exactly.
Coach, maybe if he thinks sports coach, yeah, I'd love to have a coach. But I mean, what does it entail? With my kids, Mike, is they're seeing their dad, what their dad went through, and they're gonna emulate how I do things. And you're right, there's a lot of kids, boys who don't have father figures. Perhaps if there's a friend of the family that kid specifically looks up to, by asking the mother, is there a male of age whatever and up who your son looks up to or would listen to? Because how often, Mike, as a parent, would you realize, so you see that your kid listens to like that guy over there. So I would go over to that guy and say, hey, my son listens to you. Tell him this. Basically, you tell him the same stuff that you've told from somebody outside the family. So
I have not reached the stage quite yet where dad is considered to have wisdom. I'm still kind of the goofy dad, right? So we're at that stage. I'm moving out of it. I will quickly move out of it, though. I have this plan.
I think you're closer than you think. You're 3 feet to gold, Mike. 3 feet. To
gold. Yeah. I think it's a tough subject matter because, there really isn't anything, better than being a father. But it's just tough, man. It is tough. There's no rule book that comes with it. And to your point, we tend to do, what was right, wrong, or indifferent, handed down to us and react in similar manners. And in some cases, especially if there's been abuse or something like that involved, it just doesn't work out well. No. And, I just think that we're living in a place where, from my perspective, there are a lot of people, a lot of organizations, I'm going to keep this rather vague and then everybody can figure it out for themselves. A lot of organizations, a lot of people, even you could say a lot of governments want to get inside your kid's head.
Yeah.
Yep. Criminals. Sex trafficking in this country is ridiculously bad.
It is very bad.
And as men, we play a significant role in this because we're typically the morons out paying for, essentially, in a lot of cases, children.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's important that we get our shizzled together and take ownership over some of these things in this country. Otherwise, I worry that this slide that we're on, and it feels like we're deteriorating, is going to continue. Well, so how can we take a better leadership role, not only for our families, but for this country?
Yeah, well, I mean, it is going to take a grassroots effort because the powers that be are some of the perpetrators of the things you just mentioned. You know, when I was in healthcare, I talked about the three evil entities that when they entered healthcare, they ruined healthcare. And it's the government, it's insurance companies, it's the big pharmaceutical companies. Because if you think about what drives them, it's power and money. And if we heal as a nation, they lose money and they lose control. And heal can be physically and mentally. And when you beat someone down so much that they feel they can't take care of themselves, that's when the power increases with the three evil entities. There's so many things out there that can help us as human beings that we need to find ourselves. And that's really what you and I and other people now have woken up to. That I was talking to somebody who's a holistic healer, and she's right. She mentioned that, you know, we talk about alternative medicine. Ironically, the group that created that term was big pharmaceutical companies, with their marketing. And so they're calling it alternative medicine, the Eastern medicine that's been around for thousands and thousands and thousands of years.
Yeah.
So really, the alternative medicine is pharmaceuticals because they've only been around hundreds and hundreds of years. So we kind of have to wake up to the fact that we have the brain power, our brains, we have the power to control our own reality. Every single human being has the tools within them to create their own reality. The sooner we all believe that and lean on each other, the sooner we're going to unite. So tear down those labels, you know?
I'm going to make maybe a weird analogy here, but my wife and I, you know, you were talking about Big Pharma. We recently watched, I want to say there were six episodes of it. It was a show called Painkiller, and it's on Netflix, and it is the story of Purdue Pharmaceuticals, who basically started OxyContin.
Yeah, gosh.
And how the whole OxyContin thing got started with Purdue Pharmaceuticals. And, you know, I think we all know in this country right now that OxyContin and painkillers and opioids are completely out of control.
Out of control.
And it was, you know, one of the things when they, and I'm not giving anything away here, before each episode started, they would have, typically it was both parents of a child, or at least one parent of a child that had passed away due to OxyContin. And then they would go into the episode. And I must say, I was, you know how it goes. You just kind of do life. And so I didn't know the whole history behind all that stuff, nor did I remember a lot of it.
Yeah.
But it's amazing how that all got started. But the tragedy is, they were trying to chemically take people out of their pain, which you and I, you know, if somebody's been in a severe accident on a temporary basis, you know, there may need some pain relief that needs to happen. I think we can all probably agree to that. But that's not what happened here.
Nah. Yeah.
You know, they were trying to keep people on a day-to-day high, yeah, essentially, so they could make money and just remove that pain. And I'm using pain really loose,
right,
in this case. Right. Just remove that pain from people's lives and get them hooked on drugs. So I would encourage people to watch that because it was very informational. But, you know, we talk about mental health and the mental health of men, and this is where I think it's important for men to have coaches or people in their lives to walk, mm-hmm, alongside them and guide them so that if they are having some challenges in their life, that they've got somebody there to help them.
I agree with you. And then there are people who would ask, like, why don't men seek help? And you think about, yeah, the whole aspect of shame, mainstream, mm-hmm, media, social media, saying men need to suck it up, man up, toxic masculinity, which is a BS thing. Yep. Don't get me started on that. So we're told you can't be who God created you to be. You also cannot cry and you can't ask for help. So, yep, what you're saying to men is you've got no role in society. So what I find really interesting, and for people who might say that gratitude is foo-foo and all the stuff I'm going to say are foo-foo, there's some scientific data behind something I'm going to say right now. So the first thing I'm going to say is that 85% of physical ailments stem from unaddressed internal stress. You ignore something that's happening, mental health, cognitive, you ignore it. You ignore it enough. The body says, okay, fine, pal. You're ignoring this internal stuff. I'm going to make you have a headache, a stomach ache, you know, a bad knee, a back ache. And then we know we pay attention to physical stuff. Then we go to a doctor and they put us on medication to kind of mask this, take care of the symptom, but not address the root cause. So right, think about that first, everybody, that 85% of the stuff you're facing physically, it's because you didn't address something that's happened on inside of you. Number two, 49% of the population are men. 80% of the suicides in this country are men.
Mm-hmm.
We're half the population. We're 80% of the suicides. Number three is the lifespan gap, 6-year gap. It's because we're being told to keep everything inside. Research shows that there are natural toxins in our tears. So God created tears and crying so you can release natural toxins from your body. Men are told to keep that stuff inside. There's also scientific evidence that shows that asking for help releases emotional toxins. That also prolongs longevity, like releasing natural toxins. We are told to keep that in.
Yep.
So when you're asking men to keep inside the toxins that are unhealthy, no wonder we're dying young. No wonder we have industries that are highly male populated, where the stress is high and there are introverts who are told not to share their emotion. They have a higher suicide rate. They're dying in their 50s. There's no reason men in their 30s to 50s are dying of heart attacks. We need to address more of what's going on inside and stop, you know, focusing on the symptoms, and let's dive deeper as to why the symptoms are occurring. So that's my soapbox there. I'll try to get off it if you want me to get off it.
No, I mean, it's like looking in the mirror, Drew. I mean, those are many of the same things that I say all the time. I mean, mm-hmm, you know, middle-aged men are committing suicide at the highest, you know, when you talk about 80%, I mean, middle-aged, yeah, men are the taking their lives at the highest rate.
And often, Mike, these are the people on the outside who look like the strongest men.
Right.
The ones wearing the mask that I'm strong and you ask me how things are and I say I'm fine.
Yeah.
It's the I'm fine response that we should be looking at.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. And there's a difference between I'm fine and I'm fine. And I think after a while, you know, at least for me, I'm on high alert for those things. And yeah, I sense that one person's I'm fine is not the same as somebody else's true, I'm not fine. And you can tell by the eye contact and just the way they carry themselves in their body what's going on. And you just get a sense, I think, when you get in tune with the world that, you know, something might not be going right here. And, you know, and I get that sense a lot. And usually I'm, you know, because I'm on a high alert, I might say something like, no, really, how's everything going? You know, I want to try to peel back that onion and see, you know, what's going on. And I think a lot of times people sense it in me, the sincerity of, wow, he really wants to know. And then usually, you know, we may have a conversation or we may not, you know, but I think, you know, the beauty of it is, and the awareness that, you know, one of the reasons why I want to create this show and one of the reasons that I wanted to have you on is that I want people to know that there is a movement out there from men that like you, like me, that want to see men live their best lives, be their best man that they can, be the best dad, be the best father. And listen, you and I don't know what that is. We're still working at it. Oh, but we know that if we come together in community, that we can figure it out and really help somebody. And I think that's what it's all about. And that's why I wanted to have you on today to speak more about that.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
So tell everybody a little bit about your book here and what I just love the name. I remember you first telling me the name of the book and I'm like, I'll have what she's having. I'm like, that's a classic. Tell everybody a little bit about your book before we
It's funny because the first part is, I'll get to that. But the second part really is I've always been a people pleaser, and there's a lot of certain behaviors that get confused with this being nice thing, but I'll have what she's having stems from even with when I first started dating my wife. She was a martini drinker and I had been a bartender, and she would drink her martini with vodka. And I always made the martinis with gin. So I said, hey, you should try the gin. Now, I never liked part alcohol. I hated martinis like with a passion. I was a beer or a wine, red wine drinker. So she started drinking, you know, I make her a martini. It was Tanqueray with you know, very, very dry. And she liked a lot of olives, but I did it with gin. And she liked it. And I remember when I brought her to my parents to meet them the first time, my dad knew I hated the hard liquor. He freaking knew it. And so we go in and I introduced Nathan, and dad says, you want a beer? I always loved having a beer with my dad. It was like awesome. And Mike, I miss him so much. I would do anything to have a beer with him again.
Yeah.
I would said, no, it's okay. I'm going to have a martini. He said, you hate that stuff. And I said, I like it now. He called me on it. He knew it. So that was the start of it. But the best is when I would go to a restaurant with her. And even before we were married and even after, and then we got divorced, if I dated, same stuff happened all the time. I open the menu, looking, go right to the steak. I'm like, I'm going to get that. Waitress comes over. Hi, ma'am. Would you like to order? I'd like the salmon. And the waitress would be like, that's a great choice, sir. And what would you like? And I'm like looking at the steak. I'm like, I'd like to have it. Salmon sounds good. You know, I'll have what she's having. And I'll be like, bite my tongue. I'm like, I wanted the steak. Why did I say that? And that kept happening and happening in all aspects of my life. So I'm like, that's the name of the book. And then the second part is Memoir of a Reformed People Pleaser, because I won't have what she's having anymore. Unless I remember being on one date after that, I told this woman the story and she's laughing. And I said, now look, I need you to call me on it. I'm open the menu. I want the steak. So if the waitress asks you and you say the salmon and I say the salmon, you I want you to call me on it. Thank God I said the steak that day.
Well,
so that's really, you know, where I really started to change and say, it's not good.
I might have to do something creative here, like name the podcast, I'll Have What He's Having or something. I think I may do that, Drew, actually, tomorrow. Think about it.
I was almost thinking that my second book will be I Won't Have What She's Having.
I'll Have What He's Having. That'll be the name of this podcast. Sneak peek preview. So, Drew, as we wrap up here, tell everybody how they can find the book and how they can get a hold of you.
Well, first, I wrote the book because I want to be able to talk. It's the Drew of 2023, educating the Drew of 1999 through 2022.
Yeah, yeah.
And I want, if there's a man out there who's struggling with not really being himself, that's why I want you to write the book, because I do have some teaching moments in there and ways that I progressed. And I'm going to be coming out with a workbook too. So it's on Amazon. Either look me up as Drew Durrani, or I'll Have What She's Having, Memoir of a Reformed People Pleaser. It's on Amazon. I'm working on the audiobook, but it's on Kindle and paperback right now. And on my website, you can at least read a little about the book at prophetcompassion.com. The book is just a catalyst to get people to open up and start talking. Man talk to man. And it's going to help women too, because if we help men, we can help the women in their lives.
100%. And I hope people recognize that. I say that all the time. You know, strong men will be strong husbands and strong fathers, and the family unit will be strong as a result. So it's a win-win for everybody. Drew, loved having you on the show. Enjoyed our conversation. And you know, when you write your next book, give me a shout out. We're coming back. You're coming back on, brother.
I may call it I'll Have What Mike's Having.
Well, we could talk about that. Maybe we'll write it together. That
we might collaboration.
Oh my gosh, that would be really fun.
Collaboration.
You never know what's going to come out of a podcast. Drew, awesome having you on. Thanks. I really enjoyed it.
Thank you, Mike. It's a pleasure being with you, my friend. All right,
take care.
Love you, brother.
I love the fact that Drew has been able to pivot and do something that he's passionate about. Now, in my experience, so many people just settle for the small story in life instead of following their heart, following their passions, and figuring out how to get to something that they really believe in. And I guess my own experiences have really drawn me to those type of people. And like Drew, I want to see you become your best version of yourself. You know, becoming the best version of yourself is a continuous journey, to say the least, of self-improvement and personal growth. Now, there are a number of things that you can do to start on your path to self-improvement. I think it starts with self-awareness, right? How comfortable are you with you in your personal or professional life? Are you uncomfortable with how you show up? Are you, you know, what are you feeling? You know, if you're not comfortable, perhaps it's time to begin the process to understand yourself better by reflecting on your values, your strengths, weaknesses, and aspirations in life. Self-awareness is the foundation for personal growth. It's really that opportunity to look in the mirror and determine what you want to be and how are you going to do it. And you can begin that journey by really setting some clear goals. And I talk about this quite often. So define what you want to achieve in different areas of your life, such as a career, your relationship, health, and personal development. And you could do that by setting specific, measurable, achievable, relevant, time-bound goals, right? The old SMART goals is what we call that. And that can help you stay focused. And I'm going to give you a tool later on at how you can begin to look at all those areas of your life. So stay tuned for that. Now, I also think one thing that can help you set those goals is continuous learning. Study successful people. Find out what they are doing to be successful and apply what fits to you. Heck, with the internet, there is an endless supply of success things out there. And then, you know, there's always hopping down to the old bookstore. But commit to lifelong learning. Read books, take courses, and seek out experiences that will expand your knowledge and skills. And when you do this, you will begin to develop a growth mindset. And this will allow you to better embrace challenges, learn from failures, and believe in your ability to improve. A growth mindset fosters resilience and a willingness to take risk. And those risks may catapult you to something you've never thought you could do. Believe me, taking those risks, calculated to be sure, can begin to be that catalyst that changes your life. And, you know, I hear a lot of people tell me, especially when it comes to coaching and various other things, that they don't have time for this or that or the other thing, right? Everything takes too much time. And these are usually the same people that spend 3 hours watching the news or playing on their smartphone or hanging out on Facebook. Now, if you're going to be your best version of you, time management is critical. Use your time wisely by setting priorities, eliminating distractions, and creating a structured schedule that aligns with your goals. You will be amazed at how much time you find as a result. And how about your health and well-being? Now, this is a big one for me right now. I've gone through a big transition. I've been taking the time to dive into my diet, exercise, and sleeping habits, just to name a few. If you want to be your best version of you, you have to take care of your physical and mental health through regular exercise, a balanced diet, adequate sleep, and stress management. A healthy body and mind are essential for personal growth. You know, as you explore all the relationships you have in your life, you are no good to anybody if you're not taking care of yourself first. So build positive habits, you know, identifying the habits that align with your goals and work on establishing those and maintaining them. Small, consistent actions can lead to significant improvements in your life over time. Now, along with that, surround yourself with positive influences. Surround yourself with people who support your growth, who share your values, who are givers, not takers. Limit your exposure to those negative influences, those takers in your life who look at you and go, "I'm not sure I like you trying to be the best version of you." Are those the people you need to be around? You may want to take a look. And stay persistent and consistent. Man, a lot of people miss this. Consistency wins almost every time. Small improvements in your goals and what you're trying to accomplish to be your best is going to just carry you over the top. Personal growth takes a lot of time and effort, but when you stay persistent, even faced with obstacles and setbacks, man, there's no telling what could happen. And here's something that a lot of people don't do as well, and I do think it's important. Track your progress, both good and bad. What's working and not working along the road to success? You know, regularly assess your progress toward your goals and make adjustments as needed. Hey, keep a journal, right? We talk about this. Keep a journal or use some type of goal tracking system to monitor your journey. And remember that becoming the best version of yourself is a lifelong process. It doesn't happen overnight, and there is no one-size-fits-all approach to it. I always stay away from that. What worked for one person may not work for somebody else. What worked for me may not be what works for my clients. And so I have to find that delicate balance with people that I'm working with because everybody's different. You know, your path to personal growth will be unique to you. So stay committed to self-improvement, be patient with yourself, and celebrate your successes along the way. And I mentioned this earlier. One thing I want to encourage you to do is go to my website and check out my interactive Wheel of Life. It's free. All you have to do is follow the simple prompts at truemanlifecoaching.com. And under the header, you'll find this at the top of my website. It's entitled Wheel of life. I know, shocking, right? Why is the wheel important? Well, it's going to provide you with instant feedback on where the deficits are in your life. Now, you may already know, or maybe you just want confirmation and clarification on it. Either way, you'll get it. And if you want to take a further step, you can always reach out to me at mike@truemanlifecoaching.com. I'd be happy to talk with you and find out what came back on your wheel of life. Well, I hope you enjoyed my interview with Drew Duraney. And if you did, please leave us a great interview on your favorite podcast channel. You know, Drew and I, both of us want to see you be your best version of you. And until next week, go out and make this your very best day ever. Improve your life today with Mike Van Pelt and True Man Life Coaching. Let's develop a roadmap of discovery that leads to success and satisfaction in your life. For additional information and details on how to schedule an initial coaching call, go to truemanlifecoaching.com.